Today's episode of Tech Talks on the Unsettled Media Podcast Network is brought to you by Tech Impact, focused on unlocking prosperity by embracing technology. For more, head to techimpact.it.
On today's episode of Tech Talks, we have two fabulous guests, and we're talking about sales and marketing, primarily focused on the tech sector, of course. I've worked in sales and marketing for a good part of my career, and it was exciting to have our guests talk through the work that they're doing to build this talent and capacity here in Atlantic Canada. Our guest, Dr. Shelley Reinhart, loves the challenge and has been a crucial driver of the MBA program at UNBSJ with her team. Specifically, we talk about the sales capacity they are building within the MBA program. She shares how integral the business community has been in helping shape and drive the approach and curriculum that's being taught. Jerry Pond put out a challenge to build this type of program, and of course, anything can happen over a coffee when you're meeting with Jerry. Our other guest is David Alston, a friend of mine for 30 years, and we're both proud Acadia University alumni and started together many years ago at MBTEL. David's career has been fascinating and always focused around his love of technology, strategy, and marketing. When David sees a need, he doesn't hesitate to dive in, to listen, to gain an understanding, and then look for solutions. I've seen him do it so many times firsthand. David has launched new businesses, and now he's launched a marketing accelerator called MarketSwell. In this episode, you're going to learn all about it. Marketing is so fundamental for growth, and he'll share the work he's doing and how strategic marketing leadership is a critical need for all businesses. And then we'll end our conversation talking about the skills we need to be cultivating to be really great at sales and marketing. Every student out there is going to be interested in learning more about the future of work and how there are so many roles today for students with these critical skills. Enjoy the show, everyone. Thanks, everybody, for joining us on our ninth episode of Tech Talks with Kathy Simpson. I'm Kathy Simpson with Tech Impact, and I'm really excited to have our guest today. We have Dr. Shelley Reinhart, who is with UNBSJ, and she's going to tell us all about the things that she's passionate about. And as well, we have David Alston, who is a serial entrepreneur, and he's going to do the same. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
Shelley, I'd love to get started with you. So tell us a little bit about yourself, what you're doing right now, and how did you find your way into the role that you've got today?
It's a convoluted story, Kathy, but I actually graduated from UNB St. John. So I'm a native St. Johner. I did a psychology degree here and then went to Fredericton to do my MBA after I did a little bit of market research work with a faculty member from there. And my mom owned a market research firm, but I was never really interested in it until I did my MBA. And from there, I went to do my PhD at the University of Oklahoma and came back home to work at UNB. So while I've been at UNB since 1988, I have been the director of the Electronic Commerce Research Center when electronic commerce really was not very popular. And then I went on to work with the co-op education program, then dean of the Faculty of Business, seconded to government for 4 years with the Department of Energy, and now back at UNB as the director of grad studies for the Faculty of Business, so the MBA program.
Now, when you did were the director of electronic commerce, you were really at the forefront of bringing immigrants and international students to St. John way back when. That was in the mid-90s, early late 90s, Shelley?
Yeah, it would have been in the mid-90s. Yeah, it was early. So I taught my first online course in 1996. Oh, it's been a while, and I've taught online every year since then, and I really enjoy it. So yeah.
So how did the MBA program come into fruition here at UNBSJ?
So the MBA program came to be because of some foresight of our dean of the day, John Chalikoff, and Henrik Sternichuk, who was the director of the MBA program and remains a thought leader with UMB St. John long after his retirement. But he really had a vision to have a different kind of master's program. So not the traditional program. UMB has a traditional program in Fredericton, which I graduated from. And his vision was to have something that was a little different. And so we started with a part-time offering, which then grew to a really innovative approach to put a two-year program into a one-year continuous enrollment program. And it was different, and people were a little hesitant, I think, to undertake that kind of a task because it is intensive and not for the faint of heart. But we've grown from those early days to a graduating class last year of over 90.
And is that your biggest class?
It is, except we did have a bubble a few years ago, but it was because there was a cohort of students that came as an agreement. So in terms of actual recruited enrollment, it is our largest class ever.
And from all over the world, I assume.
Absolutely. Yeah, 13 to 14 countries always, and a very multicultural, really dynamic classroom. I learn as much as they do, I'm sure.
So what's their initial reaction when they come to St. John? That first month must be wild.
It is, because for many it's cold, right? We don't really think of October or September as cold, but it's cold. But they really do have a very positive response when they come. And the majority of our international students bond immediately with our Canadian students. And they love the familiarity that they feel in St. John and the friendliness. I know that's kind of a thing we hear all the time, but people are very welcoming to our students, and they find it very safe and beautiful here.
So you've recently moved uptown St. John from where you were on campus in a different part of the city. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that strategy and how that's going?
Sure. Well, it's going spectacularly, but our strategy there was really initiated through some talks with economic development, where we've always had a vision to move the business program or some aspect of it uptown, because that's where the center of the business community is. And even though we're not very far out of town at UMB St. John, it's all about perception, you know. So For consumers, I always teach the students that perception is reality, and that is in fact the case with proximity to the downtown core. Even though it's less than 10 minutes to drive to the campus, the perception is that it's far, it takes effort. And so one of the ideas behind moving the MBA downtown was to make sure that our students had the best access to our business community, but also that our business community had their best access to our students. And so the idea was to develop collision space, where not these formal collisions where I would set up a meeting and we'd have a very, what I would consider formal and stiff conversation, but a place where we could grab a coffee and just talk about my experience in my home country, and maybe you could tell me a little bit about your business, and I might have a really unique idea that I could share with you. And that was interesting to economic development, because they have a vision of reinvigorating the uptown. And as we saw in Waterloo, having the university is part of that. It's like the anchor tenant in a shopping mall. Having a university presence in your business core is a real energy boost.
Well, I'm glad that you're here, and there's some really great things coming out, like the announcement and further development of Block 1. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So part of our move uptown is a co-location with an incubator, because it fits in well with our students' interests, but also with some of our programming. And what's really interesting about that co-location is we actually had one of our students go through the venture validation program, because they learned about that program just because they got to talk to a few people when they were coming into classes during the day. And so the even more interesting part of that is it's a former Sea Dog who came back to St. John to do their MBA program, went through the venture validation program because he has an idea for an entrepreneurial startup. And that was a great opportunity for him. And we're seeing more and more of that just because of our location. So we've had students who have met people at the market when they are waiting for their lunch. And those people have offered them a business consulting project or our version of an internship during their program. But they've also secured full-time employment from that. We've just been accredited by the Canadian Sales Professionals Association. The Supply Chain Management Association has identified courses now that students can be exempt from to get their professional designation in supply chain. We've signed the official agreement with the Project Management Institute, and those kinds of things grow out of a sense of community where you run into people and we're more visible every day.
Well, that's great news. We're going to come back to you diving deep into sales, but I want to get an opportunity to introduce our other guest who I've known for over 30 years. David, we won't talk about how old we are, but that gives people a pretty good idea. Tell me a little bit about what you're passionate about right now. Let our listeners know where you went to school, of course, and a little bit about what your career has been all about for the last 30 years.
So you hit the nail on the head in the fact that, yeah, it's been that long. I can't believe it. It's hard to believe. Acadia University, which I was 1 year ahead of you, business degree. I started in engineering, which kind of defines my, really the passion that I had. I love technology, but I love the business strategy, marketing side of technology. So my career has been one where I've bounced back and forth between whether working in a technology company on the marketing side or product side, and then in some cases working on the in a firm that focuses on marketing, but working with many, many clients around strategy or technology. So that's kind of been my two loves, and I've kind of bounced back and forth between the client side and the corporate side. So right now, in terms of where I've landed, I guess for me, I guess some of the highlights I've had were. Starting off at MBTEL, which of course is another place we spent some time together. I think I learned a lot about product development, working with customers, listening, strategy there. A great opportunity to work as a product manager, advertising manager, and then in the sales side of things. Had a chance to jump out and work in some early startups then, like New North Media, iMagic TV. These are all names that if you haven't been around for a while, you probably don't know what the heck you're talking about. And I don't want to go into too much detail, but there's some really kind of historical names. Then had a chance to work in the ad agency side of things with a few agencies, which, by the way, it was interesting. Henry Sternichek, and I remember those early days with the MBA program. I remember, you know, him working with him for a while in the agency side about, you know, what a great program and how do we help grow, you know? So it's awesome to hear the results. I did actually have a bit of a stint where I actually, during that same time frame, where I actually taught a UNBSJ marketing class, third year marketing class, my one and only shot at being a marketing professor. I don't think I was quite prepared for that. I did learn lots, and I loved marketing. After that, it was really more, I guess, where I learned a heck of a lot around global marketing was my time at Radian 6, helping lead the marketing side of things there, and in the journey and the ride that came with that. Since then, it's been mostly focused on various startups, trying to help take what I've learned and help them along the way. And also, I guess, mixing a little bit of that in that entrepreneurialism and strategic stuff into some of the volunteer stuff that I've done, whether it's government, of course, working with Tech Impact and other crew, the crew there to see, you know, how can we help the province in the government to embrace more technology and lead that way. Mm-hmm. Also a little bit around, some of the things around Brilliant Labs and how do we work with the kids in school to embrace entrepreneurship and engineering, all the whole STEAM oriented courses be entrepreneurs or entrepreneurial, to think about problem solving, to be excited about that, whether, you know, both girls and boys, everyone to be equally excited about that in all levels of school. So when they come out, they want to choose to go into areas, knowing that they could potentially have an exciting career here in New Brunswick. That's one of the things that I've found, is that maybe I'm an oddball. I don't think so, but be able to stick around in New Brunswick throughout my whole career and be able to work with some exciting projects and companies and see the world and not have to do what everyone else thought they had to do, which was jump on a plane and go to the big smoke.
At the end of the day, you're a farm boy from Sussex Corner, Dave.
That's right. I didn't tell you about all the onions I grew as a kid. No.
Or cows or whatever else.
That's right.
But you had an opportunity to work for some global companies here. And how has that really changed your mind about what we can do from New Brunswick?
Well, I was just literally talking with one of the companies that I advised just before this. And I was saying right at the beginning, it's been a while since I caught up with that CEO. And I was saying, one of the advantages that technology companies have, here in the Maritimes, Atlantic Canada, is the fact that they've got built into their DNA this element of relationships matter. It's important to be building relationships and investing in people. So from that perspective, you'd think that investing in people, building relationships, thinking long-term would be something that culturally every company in every part of the world would be doing, but I think it's more so here. Mm-hmm. And I think that's given us an advantage if I think of the companies that I've worked with. When you treat customers in a way that you respect them, listen to them, partner with them, help them grow, invest in their success. This sounds like normal. Well, why wouldn't you do that? But I don't know if it's quite as obvious in other regions of the world. So, things like that, bringing those things to the table. And the other thing I would say too, and this goes back to the early MBTEL days, is that, it's not like we have a gigantic population that we can rely on. And, you have to make a business case here work. You got to get on planes, or you got to get virtually on planes, or get on Zoom calls or whatever. You've got to get out of your region. You've got to think global from the start if you're going to want to make anything work. And that's, maybe that's not necessarily the case if you're in a bigger population area, maybe in the US or somewhere in Europe or whatever, where you could say, you got thousands or millions, or it depends if they're B2C or B2B customers to rely on. So, maybe we'll just kind of focus on them first. We don't have that option. So we got to get out of our backyard to be successful. So I think that makes us scrappy. That makes us get out of our comfort zone from the start, or it should. And I think that creates, startups that have a better thought out strategy and maybe perhaps are more hardened to be able to withstand, bumps in the road.
So, Dave, I was in the room the night that you gave your impassioned plea about why we needed an organization like Brilliant Labs to get students in schools thinking about coding and all of that. But there's another part of you that has been very much involved in social entrepreneurship and initiatives like Living SJ and others. So what gets you passionate about not only driving the economic value, but social value and equality in our province? Because that is something people know you for.
Yeah. Well, I've got I don't know if it's too simplistic of a philosophy, but the way I look at it is, imagine if you found a way to help every citizen reach their full potential and stop. So if you think about that for a second, if everyone in New Brunswick, whatever their full potential is, and everyone have different full potential, they come with different skills, they come with different passions, different interests. But imagine if we found a way to knock down the barriers and accelerate that growth and that constant learning towards, because potential, by the way, is not a fixed thing. It's always growing. It's always shaping, you know, based on the environmental factors around them, the opportunities, disruptions in the, you know, in terms of markets or whatever they're passionate about. So it's a constantly fluid growing thing. It's not static. And imagine if we could help every single person reach that. Nothing could stop a region like New Brunswick, literally nothing. So if you think about that, everything from that philosophy that I generally get involved in is around that topic, is around that theme. Sure. So, you know, Living SJ is about, you know, how do we help end generational poverty for so many people and a disproportionate mm-hmm. amount of people in the St. John region. And, you know, in a lot of cases, you know, sometimes if you look at the journey of some people, it's almost like a rocket trying to, you know, get out of the atmosphere and into orbit. It takes a lot of energy to do that. And for a person to leave generational poverty, it's a similar journey. And there's so many things that can pull that, the gravity that will pull them back to Earth. And even when they, if they do happen to get out to orbit the Earth and kind of escape that pull, you know, if they happen to kind of come down and maybe crash a bit to Earth, most of us, if we, depending on our background or our upbringing, maybe we would have people catch us on the way down, right? And, or systems catch us on the way down to help us kind of, or even the memory to know that you could get back up there and now sure. you know how to do that. Well, again, generational poverty has such a terrible, I'm going to say terrible because it is pull on people, that it makes it really hard for them to try to get back out or to bounce back or to know if they're starting to crash to pull up. We all assume that our journeys are the same as everyone else's journeys, and they're not. We have unique journeys. So I think for me, you know, any organization, anytime you can get involved in something that allows to analyze the complexity of these problems, to try to carve off things that you can kind of tackle in action, so that it allows at least to knock some of those barriers, allow people to reach their full potential, I think are always a great investment.
Well, you've done a great job, Dave. And then all of a sudden you decided to start an outdoor adventure company. Like, it is a little left of center here on some of the other lanes that you're normally in, Timbertop Adventures.
Yeah, it is. Well, I guess it's one of the things growing up as a kid, I spent a lot of time outdoors. Growing up on a 200-acre farm, lots of woods and lots of rivers and all kinds of things. So it was kind of almost going full circle and coming back to that. As you know, if you're in the tech space, you sit at a lot of desks, staring at a lot of screens. So it was kind of nice to be able to do something a little bit completely out in left field in terms of what I normally do. But at the same time, you know, what I love about Timbertop is I love building things. I love building businesses. Mm-hmm. So I love a challenge. And if people that know me generally, I've got a bit of a cycle every 3 or 4 years. I really want to take on something that's totally out of my comfort zone so I can learn. So this is kind of came up at that right time. Saw an opportunity, to work with family. It's my wife and I that work together on this, as well as our son and the whole amazing team that we work with. But it was also a chance to, and we stated this right from the beginning, and this gets back to what I just mentioned. Our goal was to, how do we create leaders? You know, we're looking for leaders to join. And so we set that at the beginning, and we literally recruited some amazing, in many cases, kids in school, whether it's in university or in some cases, like just getting out of middle school, going to high school. But we would look for leadership qualities, right? And we brought that team in and we empowered them like you would a startup. Like in the early days of a startup, you know, everyone's got to take on bigger roles. And so we gave them bigger roles. We helped them help us build the business.
Sure.
From scratch. And so, you know, I learned that that again was an amazing experience, continues to be that. A lot of those students continue to come back to work with us every year and kind of continue to build the business. And we're so grateful for that. And it shows in terms of, I guess, the people that come and enjoy the experience there, because they see people, they see the students, the team that works with us, and how much they enjoy kind of the experience of what they're providing. So I think it's been fun to try also working in a marketing experience, marketing something to a totally different number of people, and to mentor a lot of different people rather than being completely in the business.
And you've built another asset in the greater St. John area to attract tourism and to attract spend into the city. It's, I mean, it's a win-win all the way around.
Yeah, hopefully.
You know, Dave, you like to build. Shelley, you like to build. Your building is a little bit different inside the university. But let's talk about how this sales program came to life at UMBSJ. And then we're going to talk about MarketsWell. But it's really important to understand, why the heck has there been a gap in building out these skills? And, you know, I have obviously a little bit of a lens on the tech sector challenges for sales. But please, you know, give us an idea about what you're trying to do there.
Well, I'll tell you honestly that the push for the sales program came directly from the business community. And that really is, Kathy, why we wanted to be uptown, because our greatest ideas come from our partners in the community. So the Electronic Commerce Center that we talked about earlier is a great example of that. That came out of some of the leadership of MBTEL, that this was a cutting edge space that UMB St. John should be in. And so sales followed the same type of trajectory, where for quite some time there was some noise in the community that they really did need some sales skills developed. But it really was not something that the academy, I'll put in quotation marks, was overly interested in, because it was more of a training lens that it was portrayed as. And sales for years has had a little bit of a tarnished reputation, I guess, as a career choice. So when we started to talk to the community, we got a much better sense of what it was they were thinking about. And then, of course, Jerry put his challenge out, $500,000 to whatever school would develop a degree. And we thought that was pretty interesting, but we didn't move on that because we assumed that some of the larger schools in Canada would jump all over that. And so we sat back and waited to see what happened. And when nothing happened, I asked Jerry if he wanted to have a coffee. I treat him to lunch at the Delta, so he could tell me a little bit about this challenge that he put out. And the more that we got to talk, and then the more people who sent letters and called us to say that they were very interested in supporting a program like that, we got to understand just exactly what kind of program that they were envisioning. And it certainly fit within our mandate. And so we worked together with the community to develop a sales program and business development program based on informed problem solving is the approach that we took. And one of the quotes that will always remain in my memory is, one of the large consulting firms said to me one day, you know, sales is really important to us too, but we don't talk about it very often. But the fact of the matter is, a junior will always remain a junior unless they can sell and develop business. But that's really not something that we talk about. And I thought, well, you know, if that's the case, the majority of our graduates, if you look at where our graduates are placed, selling and business development is a big part of their role. And if they want to progress in their career, they need to be good at that. And so we decided that what we would do is pilot the course and see what happened. And so Chris Weir was our first instructor and was really pivotal in helping us develop the stream in sales. And it was a big hit. You know, our alumni actually came back for that first offering of that sales course because they believed that was something that was missing from the MBA when they graduated. And from there, we've developed this stream, and we are currently in the process of trying to fund a chair in applied sales research. And our latest celebration, I guess, has been around the fact that the Canadian Professional Sales Association has accredited our program, which is, you know, great for a fledgling program that kind of developed off the side of everybody's desk, but it's been very successful. The numbers are very strong. Our graduates in that stream are hired into careers that they're anxious about and really pleased with the outcome.
Do you see an opportunity for it to grow? Are you already seeing signs of this is a gap that absolutely needs to be filled?
Absolutely. And, you know, we still get the same reaction from students. Well, you know, what kind of career am I going to get? And so we're really involving the community and in particular, those who really supported the sales program to come in so that we make sure that the students understand what it is we're doing, why the courses that we have in that stream are there, and what their career opportunities are moving forward. That it's not, you know, that persona that we have of somebody with a suitcase door to door, but in fact, it is somebody who's pivotal to helping companies solve problems.
Dave, you and I have both done sales in the tech sector. I think it's a very hard job, but sales is such a strategic part of the senior leadership team of any technology company. When you hear about the role that Shelley's trying to fill at UMBSJ, what's your reaction to it based on your years of selling in the tech sector?
Well, certainly it's great to see that program come to fruition. And in fact, Chris is going to be speaking to our cohort later this year. So I'm really pleased about that, because the crossover between marketing and sales, literally in the B2B side, it's like two sides of the same, you know, same coin. It's there. They have to be so in sync. I was just thinking, you know, again, the CEO I just got off the call with, and then the call ahead before that with another CEO and the cohort member, both those CEOs sell, they sell every day, you know, so and they should be. Every CEO of every tech startup should be a great salesperson. If you're just focused on the technology part of things, then you're a great CTO, maybe. You're great at building things, but you need someone selling. You have to be selling in terms of, you know, for investors. You have to be in terms of selling in the marketplace, in terms of positioning of the company. You got to be able to sell in terms of getting in front of customers and listening and understanding what customers are looking for in terms of a product, so that you are always are relevant. You're listening in terms of where to go next, in terms of what product and features to build. You're always selling. You're always listening. And I think that's the thing, is that as Shelley mentioned, you know, like this is dates me, but you know, the Herb Tarlick of selling, which is the WRKRP, for those that are my age and older, we all know what the Herb Tarlick thing is. But the thing is, it's like selling is not some slick thing. And just like marketing is not about just like, you know, putting, you know, lipstick on something and make it all pretty. It's not, it's strategy. It's understanding where the company's going. It's staying current. It's all that stuff. So, you know, some of the best sales people are people that are thinking about not only the strategy of their company, but they're also thinking about the strategy of the clients they're working with. You know, where is that client having pain in terms of not being able to be successful? And really, it's about helping that client get over that pain point. Hopefully, with maybe something that they can offer. But sometimes it's about bringing in or mentioning others that could solve that problem. It's building relationships, you know? So these are like fundamental skills, regardless of whether you have the word sales in your title or not. These are fundamental skills that everyone needs to have. And frankly, every person going through the MBA program should literally be able to do that.
So David, you've been around this space for a long time. What made you realize you've got the UMBSJ program happening with the focus on sales and is one of the streams, and you decided to start a new accelerator program called Markets Well. So take us through how you determined there was a void that you needed to fill, and how did you go about designing something to fill that?
Yeah. So it would have been a similar kind of realization that, let's say, Jerry and Shelley and others had over the years, and just kind of seeing the gaps that constantly come up. For me, it was a combination of a few things. One, you know, having been a CMO, at the tech startup. Being plugged in over the last 10 years with the, after my Radiant 6 days, you know, with the startup community, listening, talking to startups, you see the same thing come up over time. Like, for the same reason why I think every CEO or the executive team needs to be able to sell, they also need to understand the principles of marketing. See, I see marketing as being the company, as being strategy. Marketing and strategy are the same words, right? So this is not marketing is the executional bit, but it's a team sport. Like, everyone needs to be thinking about this stuff. It crosses over multiple things. So what happened is that, you know, you talked, I'd be talking to startups and CEOs of startups, and, you know, they wouldn't have a lead marketing person sitting at the table. Like, so, and if that CEO, let's say, was technically focused, then they're missing one of the key legs of the stool in terms of being successful. If we want to create lots of unicorns, you know, in Atlantic Canada, you have to have a marketing strategist at the table working with that team at all times and from the beginning, not something you bring on like 3 or 4 years in. You can, but you're going to literally be kind of like, it's going to be by luck potentially or by heroics that you're going to get to that point. So it's not a Band-Aid. It's something that needs to be there from the beginning. So with that in mind, I just happened to have back-to-back CEO calls where they were both saying, like, we're trying to find the CMO. They believed that they needed to have someone like that. And it was like, you know what? I only know a handful. Yeah, I don't know. There's not a lot out there. And that was the other thing. It was like, well, where are these? It's just like Shelley. It's like, where do these salespeople come from? They don't grow on trees. You've got to create them. You've got to take people, mentor them, grow them, educate them, help them. And so it was like, well, if CMOs aren't growing on trees, we need to do the exact same thing. We need to create a cohort. We need to find companies that are willing to sponsor someone within their organization that has the potential to sit as a CMO someday, that needs to be kind of given the mentorship and guidance and shown the ropes of the types of things that I feel I can show them that has worked for me and maybe others through speakers that come in that work for them, in order for them to start to get comfortable in those shoes and for the organization to get comfortable in the fact that this person is going to be playing this role. And I did an in-depth with the candidate, but I also did an in-depth with the CEO. It's like, do you understand, CEO, that this role is going to be a key role? This role is going to be sitting at the executive table. This role is like your 2IC. They're going to be constantly after you and talking to you about strategy. It's not just an execution role. And they all agreed. And so that was one of the big stage gates in order to get into the program. And, you know, and since then, it's been fantastic, you know, working one-on-one mentorship. I learned a lot from working with literally from the students like at Timbertop. I learned that, you know, experiential learning is so key when it comes to this kind of thing. So what we do, we have some cohort class time, I guess if you want to call it, once a month, but most of it is one-on-one. Let's, you know, we have a kind of an end in mind in terms of what we want to cover for the year, but let's work on the things you are working on in the business. Let's understand the strategy. Let's break it down. Let's, you know, have the time between each one-on-one session per week for you to go back and execute, figure out, you know, what's needed next. And over the, you know, 1 year timeframe, we should have covered all the grounds, kicked over all the stones, and allow and build the confidence so that you feel that at least some of the knowledge I've shared with you is now in your brain, and you've got that, we've got that shared knowledge that you can then take forward in the role.
Dave, imagine 2-3 years out, what do you hope is the size of this program and what impact that you hope that you can have on the Atlantic Canadian region?
Well, I mean, it's going to be a bit of a play it by ear. I mean, the original goal I had set was like, how could we potentially create, you know, let's say 25 CMOs in our region that feel, you know, that they have the confidence to, you know, work day to day strategically in startups. And what could that then have an impact based on my knowledge and based on my philosophy of, you know, important leg of the stool, what could that have effect on the these startups in our region? Does it give us an advantage, right? The lack of CMOs is not just an Atlantic Canadian thing. This is a North American thing. This is, it's just, so if it gives us an advantage that way, then fantastic. I literally thought I'd only be working with five this year, because you can do the math, 5 years, you know, five per year, that's 25. Ended up with 10 this year. So, but mostly because there was the demand and I tried to figure out a way to make it work for them. It's, again, the way I've designed the program is I'm kind of the coach. So there's only so much time that I can dedicate to this without completely overloading my brain, because I literally live and soak my brain completely in the strategy of 10 companies. So I think there's a scalability issue I've got to overcome. So unless I can clone myself, I don't think, you know, so there'll be some of that things I've got to work out. Maybe we'll move back to less than 10 in years to come, because, or maybe there'll be a new way of scaling it, or maybe there'll be, I've already started looking at the fact that, you know, I do a lot of one-on-ones, but there's a lot of commonality in terms of the types of stuff that I talk to each startup about. So maybe it's like I'm evolving it backwards. Like, can we do more group work? And then, you know, once the foundation is in there, then go do more one-on-one. So there'll be some modifications going forward, but to make it more effective and more scalable, we'll see.
So if you think about, you're both trying to address a need in the market. So if we think about our youth who are contemplating, what do I want to take for career courses after high school, whether that be at the college or the university level, when we tend to think about the tech sector, we tend to think about architects, developers, very technical roles, engineers. But what is so such doesn't do justice to the tech sector. There are so many roles, but sales and marketing are in-demand jobs in the tech sector right now. So how do we get students thinking about careers in these areas and help them understand that you can work in the tech sector without having an engineering, a mathematics, or a computer science degree? How can we help them do that, Shelley?
So I think mentorship is a big part of that, and really exposure. So if I look at our program, one of the things that I hope over the next 5 years is that we're able to create a critical mass of sales leadership that really will envelop the community. So our high school students can come and participate in competitions or a little bit of experiential learning, be mentored by one of our students, and be exposed to some of the leaders in our community and globally whose career path is in fact sales. Because we don't really think about the CEO. So Dave, to your point, you know, if you look at the background of a lot of really successful CEOs, they have a background or at least some prior experience in the sales role. But, you know, a high school student doesn't see that. They just see the CEO of a company who perhaps is an engineer or perhaps is not, but they don't even really get that background. And so I think it's really incumbent on us to create that community of interest where everybody can come in and get that exposure, get that experience, and really understand that even getting a job for their summers in high school requires them to understand how to sell, because they're selling their main commodity, right, themselves. So that's what I'm hoping with the proximity to the community, the interest from the industry, that we can really get that critical mass of activity happening that takes that tarnished reputation of sales and makes it something really desirable.
What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, no, I echo everything that Shelley said. I think that it's, I think it's important that that students understand that any opportunity that they can get to understand problem solving and then relate that to selling is a good thing. And maybe that's the way it needs to be kind of pitched, perhaps.
Sometimes, talk about the skills.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, you are a problem solver. That's your goal. You're a listener. And in order to problem solve, you need to listen. You need to understand. You need to You need to be passionate about how do I solve that problem for that other person. That's really what it boils down to, honestly. Because if I think what happens is most people think selling's about forcing something onto someone else that doesn't want it. That's not problem solving. That's creating a problem, honestly. So, and that's not what people want. That's not what makes a startup or any company successful when they're constantly forcing something on others. It's about finding a good fit of a solution. And honestly, if the solution doesn't exist, going back to your company and saying, maybe we need to actually create something that could solve that problem. And if you keep doing that, that's what makes a successful company. You know, over and over again, it's looking for those trends and the repeatability and then constantly evolving a product to make sure it fits better and better and better to more and more customers and growing the company. That's the success model. There it is. Boom. And so that's all has to do with problem solving, aka selling. So, you know, I think if we can, if people realize that, that it is, that's what it's actually supposed to be, then honestly, I think everyone can think that they can be a salesperson.
I had a call 2 weeks ago with a young man who's working in, not working in the tech sector, but wants to get into the tech sector and he wants to get into sales. You don't have a lot of those calls. Much more of my, the resumes that I get to my desk are architects, developers, business analysts, data visualization skills, et cetera. So it was really quite a refreshing call to have someone say, I'm really good at sales. I want to get really, really good at selling in the tech sector. That doesn't happen every day. And man, wouldn't it be nice if you are able to get a lot more students out of your program, Shelley, that want to do that? You know, do you see some really unique opportunities ahead for the vision for the school that you're trying to build?
I do. You know, part of the idea of looking for a chair and then co-location and all of those decisions have been very purposeful. So what we see is the ability to then offer things like ideas summits or problem solving summits where companies can come bring their problem. A group of students can spend 24 hours on it and give their best shot. I mean, we've done it in the past in other areas and it's been very successful. And this, I think this whole opportunity with the tech sector and a number of other sectors gives us a lot of options to really build it out to be meaningful to our community, our entrepreneurs, our large businesses, our small and medium-sized businesses, and learn from each other.
And do you think, David, as their program is developing, do you see more and more students talking about careers in marketing and seeing those linkages? And how do you play a role in that with MarketSwell?
Yeah. So, I mean, right now the focus is on kind of the, you know, that strategic marketing leader within a company, because that's the kind of the current most critical need that I think that I was focused on at this point. But I've already had, you know, it's discussions with people that say, you know, it's throughout the company in terms of like when students come out of university or come out from whatever education they choose, and they want to be in the marketing field, often, you know, to come into a company, they don't necessarily have the that experiential learning background yet in order for them to be able to hit the ground running, right? Which is why I'm a big, big fan of programs like the Future Ready program, Future Ready MB program here that I know the UNB and other universities have taken advantage of, and we've certainly worked with, and it's been fantastic, as well as the Venture for Canada program that exists has been fantastic. I know there's other programs as well that that are out there. So, you know, anything that allows students to get more experience, like hands-on mentorship, and to really be able to take the knowledge that they're learning inside of an educational institution and apply it practically in a role is really important, to the point where it's funny because some of the students, like these leadership students that we were working with, let's say the ones in the marketing roles, I'd say, you know, you are running a real marketing organization. You are doing the real job. This is not a summer job that's like on the side project, come up with some PowerPoints. You know, you're not going to affect the core business. You are doing stuff that affects the core business. So you, whether you realize it or not, this is the same role as if you were in a startup or another. It's going to be slightly different flavors, maybe different things, but you're doing the real thing. So, you know, that knowing that, then going back into university, anytime they're sitting in class now, they're absorbing things in a different way, which is why, you know, the MBA program is always so key, because it usually comes with students that have had some sort of real on the ground experience. Right? So they have, a place, they have like compartments to drop the knowledge in. Ideally then, you know, if you could wave a magic wand, they'd also, and I know in some cases this exists with the students, especially at the UMD ESJ MBA program, they can go back to work the rest of that week and they can start to apply that kind of thing. That's so key, I think.
Yeah. Well, look, we're awful fortunate that you're both builders at the university, in the city, in the region, really trying to fill a need that exists. If we're going to keep growing our talent, both within our traditional businesses, our large businesses that have been in New Brunswick for a long time in Atlantic Canada, and those startup companies, these are critical skills. And I'm really pleased that we're able to put a spotlight on the work that you're doing. And I can't thank you enough for joining me today.
Thanks. It was fun.
Thanks, Kathy. Appreciate it.
Tech Talks is brought to you by Tech Impact. Learn more at techimpact.it. The podcast is hosted by Tech Impact CEO, Kathy Simpson. It's produced by me, Matt George. It's engineered by the great Zachary Peltier and is part of the Unsettled Media podcast network.